Edition, Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Welcome back to Southport, England, site of the 154th Open Championship. And Rex, you and I have returned from a long day of live from the Open on Golf Channel. We've enjoyed doing that over the past couple of days. We are back in our flat trying to relax because we really need to address the elephant in the room. It is hot. It is hot this week. And it's not necessarily the temperature that I've decided. Look, it's roughly 80 to 83 degrees. It is, I think, the fact that you cannot escape the heat. So we were out in the sun. Then you go in the media center, it's hot. You go into the bathroom, it's hot. You go into our flat, it's hot. You can't even cool off with like water because that's not necessarily cold either. You do have a cold beverage in front of you, which is satiating you at least a little bit.
A little bit. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb. And you and I both live in Florida. So this is all relative. Yes. Right now at my home, it probably feels like 110 degrees with the humidity. So this is very much a relative conversation. However, for Southport, England, for an Open Championship, for what we've come to expect, it is. We only get this about once a decade, it feels like. And talking with players and caddies and coaches throughout the course of the week, the idea that, okay, you ran into it in 2006 at Royal Liverpool. Did it, your Tiger Woods won. We ran into it a few years ago at St. Andrews. And it's difficult because there is no AC. We have a thermostat. Turns out, not a thermostat for AC. It's only a thermostat for heat. You and I just walked about, what, 20 minutes? Almost a mile back from the golf course. A little gamey.
Yeah.
A little gross. And I think it's the sunshine. It's really strong. But the bigger deal is going to be the golf course. It is going to be baked and brown and fiery and fast and all of those things.
Yeah, we're bringing it up not necessarily to complain.
Nope.
Complainers would be people like Eamon Lynch, who some have reportedly claimed that he even stole an air conditioning unit out of one of the trailers in the TV
company. I've done a little bit more reporting. It was not an AC unit. I think it was like a little fan.
Okay, well, he still stole that from someone who needed it. It would be reporting him to HR.
From Golf Channel, yes.
For that sort of violation. So, no, we're not talking that we're complaining about the heat necessarily. It is, I think, really suggestive, as you mentioned, about what we're going to face this week. And again, I just looked at the forecast. Like, we're not anticipating any sort of significant rain that's going to douse the fire that currently is Royal Birkdale. We have not seen this, Rex. You mentioned St. Andrews, and yeah, that was still really scoreable. We had record scores with Cameron Smith and Cameron Young both.
The course then was green.
On the
weekend.
It
is not green now.
It is brown. It is bouncy. It is beautiful. This is the stiffest links challenge we have faced since Carnoustie in 2018.
And a couple things factor into this. One, I did a report earlier this morning on Live From, and the idea being that when it's brown and bouncy and this firm and fast, the hardest part is the unknown. You don't know if this 6-iron's going to hit at a certain yardage and run out. You have to kind of guesstimate. You don't know if it's going to spin enough to actually hold on the green. The example that I gave, I was walking with a group this morning on the ninth hole, and the caddy kind of turned and he goes, well, you could fly at 140 and run it up, or maybe you just fly at 160 to the pin. We don't really know. And if you want to challenge the best players in the world, you don't add length, you don't add hazards, you don't add bunkers, you don't dial up green speeds. All of them can adjust to that. You give them uncertainty. You make them wonder. You make them doubt if what they're doing. And that's why this is going to be such a fun test.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. You give them options. And we've seen that, I think, around the green.
Doubt options.
At major championships. Well, options is variety. And I think a lot of times you see on the week-to-week PGA Tour, or even some major championship venues, when they have tall rough and you miss greens, you basically just have one option, right? You go and grab your 60, you lay it open, and you just sort of like chunk it out and it plops onto the green. When you have really tight lies around the green and you have balls that are running off into runoff areas, that you can use. Sure, you can use your 60. You can bump it with the 54. You can go with a pitching wedge. You can hit a 7-iron. You could even use, we've seen,
you can go through the entire bag. You can use any club in the bag. Yeah.
But that can be really paralyzing for a player because you can wonder, well, boy, I have 6 or 7 different ways to get the ball within that 3-foot circle. It's the exact same thing that you're talking about now. The difference is you're doing this with full shots. And I think I'm most interested in seeing what the strategy for players off the tee is going to be, because there's certainly one sort of school of logic where when it's this hot, it's this steamy, it's this firm, and the rough is this wispy.
We might need to apologize. It's very loud, but if we shut the windows, we have to have the windows open. So we apologize for the ambient noise.
Yeah, it certainly is going to be a little bit distracting. When it is this hot, Rex, and it's this wispy for the rough, it's really not as penal as it could be because you can really just tear through it with a wedge. So I'm really interested in seeing if this becomes a driver fest where players really just bypass some of the bunkers, some of the doglegs, and are just hammering it as far as possible, knowing I can get a wedge on it. And yes, even though it's firm, even though it's bouncy, I have a better likelihood of stopping it with a 56 or a 60 as opposed to coming into the green, even from the fairway with a 7 or 8 iron.
And I think we've heard extremes from players. You pointed out earlier that Rory McIlroy said that, no, I'm probably going to stand on a lot of tees and just bomb driver. I think the first hole will be just a fun one to watch. There's a huge, just crazy bunker down the left-hand side. I'm guessing it's somewhere in the 260, 270 range without looking at my yardage book. And AO showed an unbelievable picture. On Sunday, we were out walking. I was walking with Scottie Scheffler, Cam Young, and Gary Woodland. And Cam Young was trying to lay up short of the bunker and got one of those sort of runaway iron shots. And it, but not only did it bounce in, it was the worst possible lie. You can end up in one of the bunkers over here. It essentially buried into the foot of the lip facing towards the green. He had no options. He didn't even tried to play it, but it's an indication of, okay, Rory's going to try to carry that bunker, and he can do it. Like, it's on the cards, but now you're bringing all the rough, and it is wispy. You can, it's the chances are you're going to end up with a decent lie, but there's also a chance that you don't. On the other end of the spectrum, I talked with Colin Morikawa, who really sounded like, no, I think I'm going to lay back. I think I'm going to play. 16 was the hole he gave for an example. Downwind, depending on the wind, you probably only need to carry it 210-ish to get it somewhere up towards the green. But he said, you bring so many, it's a 390 yard hole. Yeah. He feels like he needs to carry it about 310 to get it up towards the hole. Thank you for that. But he said it brings so many things into play. You can put yourself in such a bad position. 5-iron wedge is probably going to be the answer there. So you're going to have those extremes. You're going to have Rory, you're going to have Colin, and everything in between.
Yeah. I think there's three options where you can be super conservative and avoid all the trouble by just laying back and really having a longer club in. I think you could play the golf course as it was originally intended, which is sort of playing it to the corners and then coming in. Or you could go with the approach we're most likely to see from the biggest hitters like a Wyndham Clark or Roy McIlroy, where you hit it as far as you can and sort of take your chances with maybe drawing a good lie or just stopping it with a wedge. I'm actually curious to see if those are actually the three strategies and if players evolve their strategy as the week goes on, even dependent on their position on the leaderboard. If you need to get aggressive, say to make the cut on Friday, if you need to make a charge on the weekend just to try and give yourself some more birdie opportunities, because it does seem, Rex, like this golf course, I did not remember much of it from 2017. It really has a great variety of holes. You have some really short par fours, which seem pretty gettable. You also have just some holes that are 500 yards plus par four, could be playing in the wind that you're just hanging on for dear life and trying to make par.
And now I'm going to do the weather report because I've already done it once today. So I'm going to try to do it better this time around, where this is going to get interesting even more, where we're going to have the conversations about even more doubt. For most of the week, the wind has been coming out of the east, northeast, somewhere in that vicinity ever since we got here, really last Saturday. And that's going to hold at least for Thursday's forecast. But starting on Friday, as the day goes on, right about noon, it's going to kind of flip and more out of the southwest. So essentially the exact opposite wind to what we've had. So those groups who have kind of practiced certain holes in wind, into the wind, crosswind, downwind, whatever the case may be, they're really going to have to adjust their strategy because that makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, it absolutely does. You'll be standing on links courses. You'll be like, what on earth is that bunker doing there? Like, I'm blowing the 60 yards past. All of a sudden you get a different wind direction and the opposite day, like, yep, I see it.
That's
now.
It.
All of a sudden I'm making a bogey. So that is 10 minutes, folks, of a way of saying I'm having a really difficult time handicapping this golf tournament in terms of the favorites, because I really do think when the conditions are this firm and this bouncy, anybody can really play this golf course. I could easily see a Colin Morikawa or a Tom Kim, who are average at best length off the tee, contending. And I could also see a Bomber. I could see a Chris Goddrup. I could see a Wyndham Clark, who could exploit these holes in different ways. How are you sort of seeing the favorites and the contenders lining up in that vein?
And I'll take it a step further. Our boy AO and Paige McKenzie in the desk, Brendan DeYoung, did a really good job of breaking it down. You can end up with a situation where the greens are so brown and so bouncy and firm that no one is holding the fairways. You can end up with the same situation with the greens. And then you go back to essentially what Padraig Harrington did when it was played here the last time, or two times ago, back in 2008. You can end up where the guy with the best short game and the best putter that week can win. So you're right. It's not as though we can look at one particular statistical category and say, yes, this is the one thing you have to do well here, because you could end up with a scenario where all of them are important.
I'm trying to think back, and I'm probably going to get called out for this in the YouTube comments section. I believe 2023, the Open that Brian Harman won, it at least began that week a little bit drier and a little bit firmer.
Oh, but it was saturated by the time we got to the weekend.
On the weekend, it really poured, and obviously that was when he extended his advantage. But I think he built his original lead on putting, and it just became a putting contest over those first couple of days, and he was completely lights out. I could see a scenario like that where if everyone is having a difficult time sort of in the proximity to the hole range, right, where if it's taking a huge bounce and all of a sudden everyone is in that 25-foot range, and all of a sudden you're pouring in three, four of those putts, which could be considered a bonus according to PGA Tour standards, I could see someone leaping out in that respect. It's hard to envision anyone really separating in a significant way like we saw in 06 with Tiger at Hoylake.
Oh, I agree with you on that front. And you're right. I think earlier in the week when we got here, you could have made an argument that maybe 15 to 20 guys had an opportunity to win this championship. I think in my mind that list has expanded dramatically because going into 08, Patrick Harrington probably wasn't on top of anyone's list. And the one thing he did well with there, short game, chipping around the greens. He didn't put himself into any of those bunkers where you can absolutely just take a huge number. He never did that. He thought his way around this golf course. So suddenly you do have this huge list of potential winners.
I mean, back in 2017, and Jordan Spieth, the eventual winner, I mean, he was a top one, top two, top three player in the world at that time. It was interesting to reflect on that because I remember covering it in just the 29 minutes of madness that unfolded on that 13th hole. It is going to be different this time of round. This time around, 13 is still there. 14, which was the par three, and if you don't recall, back in 2017, Jordan Spieth, after the madness of the 29 minutes and the eventual saving for bogey, he stepped up on the next tee on the par three and nearly had a hole in one. Ended up hitting it to about 4 or 5 feet and made birdie. That hole is gone. That hole has been replaced now by a par five, which was at the time 15. That was then the go get that hole that Jordan Spieth made eagle. So that hole was 15. Now it's 14. In its place is this new par 3 15th, which Rex can range anywhere from 200 to 260 yards. It's been a talking point in the run for the championship, just as Roy McIlroy predicted it was going to be. It's also been, I think, it's going to be a talking point the remainder of this championship, not just because of the whole design, but certainly where it is located in a player's round at a pretty consequential point.
I'm going to be a little bit more blunt than that. Players don't like it. 15, by and large, they don't like it because it doesn't fit. And there's a couple of holes since the redesign that don't fit. And I think the problem with it is, depending on the wind, earlier in the week it played into the wind, it can end up being an impossible hole because there's virtually no room to run it up. Normally on a links course, even on a hole, especially on a hole like that, you at least have the option of playing something low and trying to chase it up the green. You'd have to absolutely hit a perfect shot to do that on 15. So I think that's one of the holes they probably don't like. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, I think 5 is a much better hole. I think you and I have talked to a lot of players who will tell you what they did there, and they essentially turned it into a blind tee shot, into a drivable par 4 that will lead to a lot of conversation and players having to make a lot of interesting choices. So really good job on 5, maybe not so much on 15.
15, it was described to me as, quote, an abomination.
Who said that?
Can't say.
Name
man. Sticks out like a sore thumb.
Give the source.
And one, Rex, this one from a caddy who said that this is enduring proof that you do not have to have a hole that is long to make it challenging. As you mentioned, it is a really narrow throat to the green with very severe runoffs on either side. And because it is so firm and because it is so fast out there, you could see balls that look like they're going to be on the green actually wind up in the fescue, from which point then you're hitting back up to the green, which again is pretty narrow, and just a really, really difficult hole. It can play upwards of 260 with the wind that we've seen over the first couple of days.
Wind is going to flip, though.
Wind's going to flip, which actually might make it harder because it is Redan-like, sloping from the front to the back. And if you have a little bit of wind aiding, particularly out of your right-hander's left-hand side, going to be very, very difficult to hold that green. I'm also not anticipating them to play it back at 260. I think it probably settles in more like the 200 to 220 range.
I was going to button that up, but instead I'm going to do some housekeeping. The real elephant in the room, as some of you who watched live from the last 2 days might know, my man here is playing hurt. He had a serious injury 2 nights ago. We were at dinner. We actually found a decent barbecue.
Serious is actually quite relative.
Well, for him, it's quite serious. We actually found a decent barbecue place, and pick up the story.
if you
want the real story, what happened here, we joined Mark Schlabach.
We told the real story. We haven't lied about it.
No. This is the full story.
Okay.
I would say we joined Mark Schlabach, who, if you were fans of the Pat McAfee show, is now known as International Schlabach, but he's who we referred to as Bulldog on the show. He wanted to, he's a Southerner. He wanted to go to a barbecue joint. We ordered something of a sampler platter, had a bunch of meats, had some sausage, had some ribs, had some brisket. I bit into what was supposed to be a sort of jalapeno cheese sausage.
It's very good, actually.
Imagine my surprise when I bit into what I thought was going to be a succulent slice of sausage and felt an immediate crunch and a crack. So I went diving into the sausage and found what was some sort of bone fragment. Why there would be bone fragment in a piece of what was supposed to be succulent jalapeno cheese sausage still sort of defies explanation, but I was sort of messing with it. I knew something was wrong. Maybe I thought that I cracked a filling. Came back to our flat about an hour later, went and grabbed some floss, thinking that I needed to make sure I didn't have any food particles in between my teeth, and yoink, I popped out my crown.
And yelled,
holy, you know what? Just worried that I was not going to be able to perform my duties for the rest. I didn't realize that immediately that it was a crown either. I actually thought it was my tooth. And it's this one.
Take it out.
If you're watching, on YouTube, which would have been a very, very ugly look. I wouldn't necessarily have looked all that out of place here.
No one would have seen it.
In Southport, England. I would have if I was smiling widely, just because I'm on national television. I would have been smiling widely. And so, yes, I popped it back in. The panic subsided. The nerve pain, most importantly, subsided. Yes, I had a difficult day on Tuesday, but I feel good as new and looking forward to attacking some Guinness later tonight.
And please let us know in the comments why you think a piece of bone might be in something called sausage. Because I've tried to convince him that, yeah, sometimes that happens, like they're grinding up parts, and maybe that's the deal. But you have played on. You've been brave. Anna Jackson has been very mean. I think she's going to get a report to HR as well.
she most certainly is. All right, Rex, let's go through some of the contenders and maybe some pretenders for this week. We do have up on golfchannel.com a punch out. You have not yet filed it, so I wouldn't necessarily send people there immediately. However, when they do get around to seeing it later on this evening, who is your, I don't know, pick to win, challengers, contenders, pretenders, things of that nature?
Fred, you'll get it right after this. I promise. We'll get it up as soon as possible. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to promote that on live TV when it was, in fact, not up. And it's not up because of me.
Dozens of folks have been flocking to the website waiting for the full report.
I'm actually still struggling with winners because you can sit and go through the obvious list. I mean, I think I would probably start somewhere around the ID. And we did this last night with the Englishman, but I love Matt Fitzpatrick as not just the top Englishman to pick. I just love the idea of he's coming in here, having played some of his best golf of his career. He asked, how would you compare this to when you won the U.S. Open? He feels like he's a much more complete, better player, specifically iron player, which is going to come into effect this week. He's one of only two players who've won three times this year on the PGA Tour. He played really well last week at the Scottish Open on, we'll call it, it's a links course.
Links adjacent.
Sure, yeah. It's a links course. And the one thing he did there, he was third in the field in strokes gained approach. But the one thing is, I just think he's going to be the best prepared, the most prepared player in this field. Back in 2017, he befriended the ladies president of this club. And he's been making this trip for the last couple of years as kind of a links boot camp, getting ready for the Scottish Open, getting ready for the Open Championship. I think a lot of guys, including Jordan Spieth, who I spoke to a couple days ago about, what do you remember about this place? And it's changed quite a bit. No one's going to know the golf course better than him.
Well, unfortunately for you, I've already called dibs on Matt Fitzpatrick of my winner as of the 154th Open Championship, because I actually filed it and is sitting in Fred's inbox as we speak. I also like Fitz a lot this week for a couple of the same reasons. When he is in a groove with the driver, and I talked to him at the Travelers Championship a couple weeks ago, you might look at the statistics and he's fallen off a little bit, strokes gained off the tee. There's a good reason for that. He cracked his driver on the eve of the Truist Championship, went about a month and a half trying to find a solution. He actually did on the Monday of Travelers Championship week, and you look at what he's done since then. Gave himself a great opportunity to win at TPC River Highlands, another great opportunity to win last week at Renaissance Club
When he has the driver going in any other tee that he's, any other club that he's using off the tee, he can certainly get into a good groove. You mentioned the approach play, and that really has been the market improvement that he has made year over year in Matt Fitzpatrick's game. I think it's really interesting this week because the fairways, because they're so brown and dry, they are super, super tight. It makes a different sound than, let's say, you're hitting off the turf at Muirfield Village for the Memorial. It's almost like a clack or a gunshot that sounds like that the players are hitting off this turf. So I do think this is going to be a pretty significant test for a player who has revamped his iron game. Again, you think of great iron players over the past decade. You think of Scottie Scheffler, obviously. You think of Justin Thomas. You think of a Tyrrell Hatton, who has thrived in that category throughout the course of his career. I do think because of Colin Morikawa, another good example, the tightness of the turf is going to present a lot of challenges for players because you really have to be precise with the strike or that ball could wind up in some pretty nasty places.
We're going to see some players hit some shots that you just don't normally see the top players in the world hit. And maybe they're a little bit off, but not that far off. And it's going to have everything to do with the turf. If you've ever had the pleasure of coming over and just not playing links golf, playing this type of links golf, where it almost feels sometimes like you're hitting off of concrete. If you don't make perfect contact, it's going to be a clank. It's going to be an ugly shot. It's going to go in a very, very bad spot.
The sound is just it's just different. It's just unbelievable. It's a lot of fun to listen to and watch.
And the inverse is when you make good contact on links turf, it's nothing feels better in the world. Yeah, it's such
completely
a good
orgasmic. Yep.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it.
Because you have such a good it's such a good feeling. However, okay, you called dibs on Matt Fitzpatrick.
I did.
And I guess I need to go in a little bit different direction. And you and I was going to do contenders maybe a little bit under the radar on the live from earlier tonight, but instead I saved my time to make fun of him because of about his tooth. I felt like it was time much better used. I would have said Chris Gutterer. And I don't know if that's really
world number six, yes.
And my comment to that, to our producer, Mark Zahner, thank you for pointing this out, when he said the same thing is how many times have we mentioned the name Chris Gutterer this week on early live from? And his answer was, well, we intended to.
Throw in the producer under the bus.
And it has nothing to do with Mark. Mark does a fantastic job. He is very much under the radar when you sit and talk about Tommy Fleetwood. If you're gonna pick someone with your heart, it's gonna be Tommy Fleetwood. He grew up by 5 minutes from here. Everyone is going to be rooting for him. It would be a magical story. For those of us who write stories for a living, I don't know, you could pick a better one. I think Matt Fitzpatrick is very closely behind it. We can sit and make a really great argument for Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy and keep going on and on down the list. I love Gutterer for a lot of different reasons, but mostly he's proven he can play links golf. He won the Scottish Open last year, contended again this year. He has
finished third, I think, at the Open in his debut last year.
Last year, and I just think he's the type of player where he has the game to do it. He's always already proven it, and I don't think anybody not named maybe Matt Fitzpatrick has the swagger right now.
Yes, you mentioned Matt Fitzpatrick, one of two players on the PGA Tour who's won three times this season.
The other one?
Chris Gutterer is the other one. Couple other players, Rex, that I could see playing well that I mentioned on live from earlier. Victor Hovland, the winner a couple weeks ago at the Travelers Championship. Tyrrell Hatton, who I've already mentioned because of his iron play. And last week's winner in Tom Kim. I like all those players for different reasons. Victor Hovland, I stood and watched him for about a half hour today. And if you have watched Victor Hovland at all over the past, I don't know, year or two, it has always been a search to try and rediscover the form that he had in 2023. And watching him on Wednesday on the eve of the Open, there is no searching. He didn't even have track men out there. He was just hitting shot after shot exactly out of the window that he was intending. He always, at his best golf, hits this sort of like pull fade. It's a little bit unorthodox, but he comes over the top and pulls it, and then it just drops back on the target that he is intending. He did it over and over and over again with every single club in his bag. There was no stress. There was no wondering. There's no video. There's no training hints. There's no floaties and all sorts of weird things that we've seen Victor Hovland do over the past couple of years. He looks incredibly comfortable. And as he showed just a couple weeks ago at the Travelers, staring down Scottie Scheffler, he's incredibly confident as well. How about, Rex, on the flip side, some players that maybe you're not anticipating to fare as well this week at Royal Birkdale?
Again, cannot apologize enough for the noise outside, but if we shut those windows, all you're going to see is two essentially puddles of sweat because it would be way too hot in here. So we are sorry for the ambient noise. This one's pretty easy for me. My guess is you've already called dibs on him as well. I envision Bryson DeChambeau missing his fourth consecutive cut in a major championship.
The DeSlambo.
That's good. Did you use that?
I did not. Did you? I may have to trademark that.
Yeah, that's pretty good stuff. You need to circle back around and write that down. Couple things. One, clearly he hasn't played well in the major championships this season. And two, just watch the body language. Everything that he's done this week, I've had a chance to watch him on the range, watch him on the golf course a little bit. It seems like the world's unraveling for him. And I know that's kind of always what it feels like, because there's always so many things going on with Bryson, but he doesn't feel like he's closer now than he ever was.
I mean, he's already missed three cuts in the major championships. And you're going to point to the fact that he's top 10 at the Open, which is the major you would think would be worse suited for his skill set. He did so at St. Andrews and even last year at Royal Portrush. Those, I think, were two different tests where they were very soft and very scoreable. This one is going to be the firmest and bounciest that he has played in his championship career so far. This is a player
and
who
iron
loves,
play is an issue
yes,
for him anyway.
He has new 3D printed irons. This is the first week that he's going to be debuting the full set of 3D printed irons. And maybe it is the fix. We haven't seen it in competition, so it might be a little bit unfair to rule him out strictly because of his iron play if he does have a new set of irons in the bag. But it's certainly going to be a stiff test in that regard. But here's a player who loves to really control all of the variables, at least try to control all the variables. And this week, in the condition that the golf course is going to be, with as bouncy it is, the unpredictable, some of the quirks of links golf, it does seem like a battle he will not necessarily be able to conquer. One player who is further up the world rankings, at least, who I think would be at least somewhat of a surprise if he does not play well, that I'm not necessarily have the highest expectations for, is Ludvig Åberg. Missed the cut last week at the Scottish Open. Apparently, there was a good reason for that. His driver cracked on the way over from the States to Scotland, still trying to get into a new model as well. Here's a player who, Rex, we have a lot of expectations for. Physically, he is such an imposing figure. You look at his skill set. He looks like he could be a potential world number one, and yet the resume has not quite caught up to that. I'm not necessarily saying the clock is ticking on Ludvig to produce in the major championships and finally bag a big tournament, but I am seeing sort of a disconcerting trend where the tournaments that it has been in contention for, he hasn't closed out, and he does not quite have the week-to-week consistency that I think he was necessarily billed for a couple of years ago.
Oh, no. There's no way you could sit and make that sort of assumption for someone who has so much talent, that's so young, that's so, as you pointed out, that just athletically imposing when he walks it down the range. And when you just talk about aesthetically, I don't think anybody has a better swing right now. It used to be Adam Scott. Now
it's still Adam Scott.
I mean, Adam Scott himself is more aesthetically pleasing.
He sure is. Handsome fella.
I'm going to go with Ludvig Åberg. I guess the point is, yes, there's been some backsliding. And certainly you look at the Players' Championship and you try to figure out how do you connect those dots. And I think it's just a learning curve. I think it's easy to dismiss how young he is. Go back to last Sunday.
He's not that young, Rex. He's 27 years old. All of a sudden, when you start looking around the landscape, at some of the players, some of his contemporaries, Chris Gaudrup certainly comes to mind. Cameron Young, just a couple years older. They have, I think, some more significant titles and certainly more PGA Tour wins than Ludvig Åberg does at this point, who's not quite that young anymore.
And I think it's natural some guys skip to the front of the line for whatever reason. Maybe it's grit. Maybe it's mentality. Maybe it's just they excel at certain parts of the game that are just more important, whatever the case may be. I am still high. If you're asking me if I'm buying the Ludvig Åberg stock, I am still buying it 100%. I'll go back to last Sunday when Tom Kim is in the conversation. I think you brought it up. He is still very young. Oh. And I think it's a little ridiculous sometimes when we start looking at the context of Tom Kim hasn't won in over 1,000 days.
He's still 24 years old.
He can still just barely rent a car. Yeah, like it's hard to put that in context. And I do think it's stunning that we haven't really spent any time talking about Scottie Scheffler. The world number one.
We have one commenter on YouTube who every single week berates me for talking about Scotty and Rory. So I was trying to give this commenter what he's looking for, and now I even mentioned them, so now he can direct his ire at you.
Please do, because once again, at the Open Championship, Scottie Scheffler sort of sat down on the couch and decided that he was going to open up his feelings and really just get into his feelings. I think the one that sort of stood out to me is we're all going to die. And that sort of made us all sort of pause for a minute, like, okay, it's factually accurate, but why are we going down this road? It is amazing how he gets here, and maybe here isn't the best way to put it, but maybe it's the end of the major championship season is what I was thinking about. The one thing that players of his caliber are going to fixate on, you get to the end of the road and you start thinking to yourself, I am going to go another few months before I start thinking about the most important things, and at least professionally again. And I guess that's hard for him to get around. I do think it's refreshing if you actually listen to what he says. Oh. The idea being that I can't wrap myself up in the results because that's not going to be gratifying. Getting to the top of the mountain, winning the career Grand Slam, winning multiple majors, whatever the case may be, that's going to be fun for about 15 minutes. His words, not mine. 15 minutes.
He said five.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he said five. Where he gets real joy is in the process. And the process has been grueling this year for him. It's been difficult. He's had to really almost go back to the A, Bs, and Cs, which is amazing because it seems like that's what he does every time when he grabs a golf club. But I think in a weird way, this has been a very rewarding season for him in that aspect.
Maybe. I really want to defer my time on this to please the YouTube comments.
He's world number one. I think we have to address him.
Both of those two players, Roy McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler, were asked about legacy and how much they're thinking about it. That's what sort of preempted or precipitated the discussion about we're all going to die someday. Roy McIlroy said that he wasn't interested in legacy either, which I thought was an interesting discussion. I don't know if it's the accents. I don't know if he's tired. I don't know if it's the jet lag and the sleeping pills he might be taking to get some rest at the end of the night. But yeah,
breaking news:
Scottie Scheffler at the Open Championship always seemed to deliver. Very thoughtful. I would highly encourage everyone to sit down and listen to those 15 minutes. I did want to say something quick about Rory McIlroy, because what we've seen sort of a pattern since the Masters, and I'm curious if it rears its head once again this week at Royal Birkdale, is he has continually had these 9-hole stretches where he just, quite frankly, loses the golf tournament. And you look at every single one of the 4 starts he has made after Augusta National, he has had at least one 9-hole stretch of 39 or worse. He just racks up bogeys. He just looks a little listless. He can't get off the bogey train, and all of a sudden, his week is shot. Can he stay focused? Can he concentrate? Can he avoid those stretches throughout the course of the week at Royal Birkdale? Yes, you're going to make bogeys, but can he actually sort of stall some of the poor or bad momentum that he's experienced and he certainly has been prone to over the past couple of months? I think that's something I'm most interested in seeing out of Rory this week, because everything else, the tools, it actually looks pretty solid at this point.
And that was 100% the case last week at the Renaissance Club. It was just 9 holes in the third Renaissance Club during the third round to start that third round that really allowed him to play his way out of that tournament. So you're right. I mean, you need to keep an eye on, is he going to have one of those lapses where he just essentially throws the tournament away? I immediately went to, when I was doing this morning's weather report, trying to figure out where the wind is going to be for the rest of the week, because he has
ask Aaron Oberholzer. He'll tell you.
Yeah, he has a wind chart ready, because Rory has been perfectly clear that his struggles stem from the fact that when he's standing on the range, if it's essentially into maybe off the left as a right-hander, it's tough because the club face and the path sort of get askew, and you can understand how that happens. But it's amazing how many times he has said that over the last really few months, that things got sideways because I had this weird wind and I don't know how to control it, which is odd. For a player of Rory's caliber, you would have thought he would have come up with some fix.
He'd have come to the other side of the range.
Sure, that's the easiest way to do it, but you're going to face shots in that wind anyway on a links course. That's the beauty of a links course. You face pretty much every direction. It's out and back normally on traditional links courses. So I am a little surprised from that. I'm going to be stunned if he's not in the mix.
Keep in mind, folks, that was Rex who brought up a discussion about Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, not myself. YouTube commenter, please.
World's number one and two.
Director Iyer.
I will go ahead and take that.
Any other storylines?
We're also 30 minutes in.
I know. Any other storylines that you wanted to touch on, Rex, in this Open Championship preview for the 154th edition?
I think, I guess the part I want to camp on is this is going to be perfect golf. And I remember getting a phone call from my mother-in-law a few years ago. And I think this was during the 2006 Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. And the comment was, what's wrong with that golf course? Mm. And my answer was absolutely nothing. And for those of you who would tune in over the next couple of days, I'm pretty sure golf savvy fans would be like, oh, that's cool. The ball's running forever. It's brown and bouncy. It's such a unique, different test of golf. For those who tune in and think, I don't want to watch that, keep in mind, this is the way golf really should be played. Links golf is so much fun to begin with. When it's like this, it's magical.
Yeah, it's not quite as fun when a links course is green and it plays slow. That's no offense to what happened last year at Royal Portrush. You and I had a blast. We had a great winner in Scottie Scheffler. It seemed like certainly the culmination of what was another great season. But this, I think, is a more fun, a more compelling test of golf. Not necessarily we're going to produce a better winner. We could have some fluky results. We're going to have to wait and see. But I think the actual skill that's involved and some of the different shots, you're going to see 4 irons that go 300 and you're going to see 4 irons that go 175. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be certainly a departure from what we see week in and week out on the PGA Tour. One other thing that I want to be looking out for this week, and it was mentioned during the RNA press conference on Wednesday, was the fact that this player code of conduct policy, it's been a talking point at the first three major championships of the year. They said, the RNA does, that they have a clear decision-making process as it relates to what the infractions and the violations of that player code of conduct are going to be. What is not so clear, folks, because this is ironic, what is not so clear is what those violations actually are and what sort of crosses the line and becomes egregious, which would either trigger a warning, trigger a two-shot penalty, or even in some severe cases, they can escalate it immediately to a disqualification. It was a talking point, obviously, at the U.S. Open with Joaquin Niemann receiving a two-shot penalty, not a warning, after what the USGA described was a pretty egregious violation.
But no one saw it.
But we do not have any video evidence. Mark Darbin, the CEO of the RNA, was asked repeatedly whether, if there is video evidence of a potential infraction, would they share it with the media? Would they share it in the interest of transparency? He said, we will have a clear understanding and rationale for what exactly that entails.
And I'm not going to bog this down. We're going to do a sort of a post-major championship season pod next week. Maybe that's the better time to do it. Todd Lewis, our colleague, and I have really gone toe-to-toe on this one because he's much more of a traditionalist. He feels like he's really bought in to this new policy that throwing a golf club, which is what Joaquin Niemann did at the U.S. Open, that's where they want to draw the line, and that's why he got the one-stroke penalty. I lean into, we didn't see, the public, didn't see what Joaquin Niemann did at Shinnecock Hills. We did see what Sergio Garcia did at the Masters. We saw how egregious and petulant that is. I'm not saying there shouldn't be a policy, 100%. If they do something like this, if the players are going to act like children, then yes, there should be a penalty. But I'm getting caught up on the idea that how, whatever it is that Joaquin did that was a one-stroke penalty, which is pretty stiff, and that we did see what Sergio did, which seems really egregious and petulant and unnecessary to me, and yet he only got the warning. That's where I want to see some clarity.
There's no way that it's going to be applied evenly. There's no way that it's going to be applied to all 156 players in the field, players who are on television more, like some of the superstars versus some of the unknowns and the players who are toiling in anonymity. It's just not going to be applied evenly. So when you have that factor, in addition to sort of a lack of clarity and just the regular vagueness of what actually constitutes egregious conduct, it's all a little bit too messy. I think it's well-intentioned. I think their heart is certainly in the right place of wanting to set good examples. And the fans who are watching, I still think it's a little bit BS, but the fans who are watching want to see acceptable behavior from the top professionals. I understand the leadership position the RNA is in. However, I think the way that they're trying to go around it, the way that they're trying to go about it without clear guidelines of what actually constitutes something that would trigger a warning, a penalty, disqualification, I think that's where they're losing me here.
And just to get out of here on this, and this cannot be overstated, the idea that you and I stayed up pretty late last night watching the World Cup semifinal match between France and Spain. It was a terrible match. I can't believe that France played that bad. However, tonight's match, this is Wednesday night that we're recording this, is going to be England and Argentina. If England wins that semifinal match, the final would be on Sunday. Cannot overstate what this place might possibly be like. Imagine a scenario where England is playing for the World Cup and a Tommy Fleetwood or a Matt Fitzpatrick is playing for an Open Championship. This could be the center of the sporting universe.
Tyrrell Hatton, Aaron Rye,
sure.
Justin Rose, so many possibilities for English golf this week. Royal Birkdale will absolutely be on fire. I'll be very curious if the situation does come to pass, and this may be a moot point, in about 7 hours.
We're going to the game in a little while.
When the match becomes final. Will it have sort of the same vibe as a Saturday, Sunday at the WM Phoenix Open, where Saturday is the real party? That's the culmination. And Sunday, because everyone is getting ready for their Super Bowl parties, it's not quite as lively at TPC Scottsdale. I do wonder if that'll be the situation here at Royal Birkdale if England's in the final and you do have a championship that is going to be decided on Sunday evening. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Joe Podcast. Rex and Lav, a couple of housekeeping items to point out. We'll be having mini pods for the next three rounds after the first, second, and third rounds of the Open Championship, and then the made for TV edition, 52 minutes on Sunday evening. We'll also have three more editions of the Live From newsletter with Rex and Lav. They're going to be hitting your inboxes on Thursday morning, Saturday morning, and Monday morning as well for a wrap up of the Open Championship. And in the meantime, you guys can go to golfchannel.com for more of our news, notes, and analysis, including the punch shot. The aforementioned punch shot, which Rex, as soon as we finish this recording, will actually file. Sorry about that, Fred. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Enjoy the first round of the 154th Open Championship, and we'll talk to you guys on Thursday night.